she's a hoe. We some hoes. Wouldn't you like to be a hoe too? All right, hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Hoe in the Know. I am, you know what, I was going to say Sleepless in Selena, but I've done that one before. You know, you get to a point where you've done a lot of these monikers. I am not really celebrating Thanksgiving, but celebrating a national day off for most people, although not all people, Selena.
I'm one of those non-people who didn't get Thanksgiving off, but that's cool.
Cause, you know, why celebrate massacre?
Yeah, get paid instead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I am, I really don't have one today.
Black Ops? No. I don't know why.
I'm Nintendo switching it up, Corey.
Ooh, I love that. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, my Nintendo Switch is beautiful. It makes me so happy. And today we have Amira.
Hello.
Amira, who is known for her page Hoes Are Healers, at Hoes Are Healers on IG. Check her out.
Every episode we begin with a segment we call Historical Hoes. And this week's historical hoe is actually not a single person, but a place called the Hellfire Club. We got our information from their Wikipedia page. Hellfire Club was a name for several exclusive clubs for high society rakes and womenizers established in Britain and Ireland in the 18th century. Such clubs were rumored to be the meeting place of, quote, persons of quality, unquote, who wished to take part in socially perceived immoral acts, and the members were often involved in politics. What went on in the clubs and who attended were and continue to be shrouded in mystery. The clubs were rumored to have distant ties to an elite society known only as the Order of the Second Circle. The first official Hellfire Club was founded in London in 1718 by Philip Duke of Wharton and a handful of other high society friends. However, the most notorious club associated with the name was established in England by Sir Francis Dashwood and the Earl of Sandwich, and met regularly from around 1749 to around 1760. The first meeting at Sir Francis's family home in West Wycombe was held in Walpurgis Night, 1752, a much larger meeting. It was something of a failure, and no large-scale meetings were held there again. In 1751, Dashwood leased Medmenham Abbey on the Thames from a friend. On moving into Medmenham Abbey, Dashwood had numerous expensive works done on the building. It is thought that William Hogarth may have executed murals for this building. None, however, survive. Eventually, the meetings were moved out of the abbey into a series of tunnels and caves in West Wycombe Hill. They were decorated again with mythological themes, phallic symbols, and other items of sexual nature. Records indicate that the members performed, quote, obscene parodies of religious rites, end quote. According to Horace Walpole, the practice was rigorously pagan. Bacchus and Venus were the deities to whom they almost publicly sacrificed. Dashwood's garden at West Wycombe contained numerous statues and shrines to different gods, Daphne and Flora, Priapus, and previously mentioned Venus and Dionysus. Meeting occurred twice a month, with an AGM lasting a week or more in June or September. The members addressed each other as brothers and the leader, which changed regularly as abbot. During meetings, members supposedly wore ritual clothing, white trousers, jacket, and cap, while the abbot wore a red ensemble of the same style. Legends of black masses and Satan or demon worship have subsequently become attached to the club, beginning in the 19th century. Rumors saw female sex workers referred to as nuns. Dashwood's club meetings often included mock rituals, items of pornographic nature, much drinking, wenching, and banqueting. The downfall of Dashwood's club was drawn out and complicated. In 1762, the Earl of Bute appointed Dashwood his chancellor of the exchequer. Exchequer? I don't know. We're going to go with that. Dashwood resigned the post the next year, having raised a tax on cider, which caused near riots. Dashwood then sat in the House of Lords after taking up the title of Baron Lee Despenser after the previous holder died. Then there was the attempted arrest of John Wilkes for a seditious libel against the king in the notorious issue number 45 of his North Brighton in early 1763. During a search authorized by a general warrant, a version of the Essay on Women was discovered and set up on the press of a printer whom Wilkes had almost certainly used. It was scurrilous, blasphemous, libelous, and bawdy. Though not pornographic, still unquestionably illegal under the laws of the time, and the government subsequently used it to drive Wilkes into exile. Between 1760 and 1765, Chrysal, or The Adventures of a Guinea by Charles Johnston, was published. It contained stories easily identified with Medmenham, one in which Lord Sandwich was ridiculed as having mistaken a monkey for the devil. This book sparked the association between the Medmenham monks and the Hellfire Club. By this time, many of the friars were either dead or too far away from the club to continue it as it did before. Medmenham was finished by 1766. In 1781, Dashwood's nephew, Joseph Alderson, an undergraduate at Brasenose College, Oxford, founded the Phoenix Society, later known as the Phoenix Common Room. But it was only in 1786 that the small gathering of friends asserted themselves as a recognized institution. The Phoenix was established in honor of Sir Francis, who died in 1781, as a symbolic rising from the ashes of Dashwood's earlier institution. To this day, the Dining Society abides many of its predecessor's tenets. The Phoenix Common Room's continuous history was reported in 1954 as a matter of note to the college. In its later years, the Hellfire was closely associated with Brooks, established in 1764. Many other clubs using the name Hellfire Club were set up throughout the 18th century. Most of these clubs were set up in Ireland after wardens had dissolved. A number of Hellfire Clubs are still in existence in Ireland and are centered around universities and meet secretly. For example, there is a Hellfire Club at Trinity College that meets in central Dublin, while there's also a Hellfire Club at Maynooth University that meets in Maynooth. That is the curious history of the Hellfire Club. A scurrilous, blasphemous, libelous, and bawdy, yet not pornographic, historically slutty society. And this week's historical hook.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me on the show.
For sure. I know you through Diosa Crochet. They're my friend, and I think you guys are friends.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Angel's one of our Reiki healers.
Yes. Yes. And so how long have you been a part of the healing community?
And how did you get into it specifically for sex workers?
I'll tell you guys everything. I want to claim my moniker, Amira.
Yes.
And I've been reflecting a lot because I've been doing this for 4 years, specifically focusing on sex worker healing. And we've kind of been really hitting some milestones as a community. It's been pretty cool to see the culture shift and just see, like, how much of a, even though we still have a lot of the same issues that we've been dealing with, there's just a shift in the culture. It's like there's more spaces for us to have community spaces, and just by our activism, like, we've really pushed the culture forward in terms of accepting sex workers and not vilifying us and just, like, you know, sort of letting us be, even though they're still all in our business and stuff.
But yeah.
That one of the things about providing healing that's specific to sex workers is that a lot of people that aren't sex workers are also drawn to it because they have their own reasons. And then there's just such gray area. Like, I really like to be part of the gray area between sex worker and not a sex worker. Because I think sometimes some of our most vocal opposition, like, they actually have sex work experience, you know, and it's sort of like there's a big gap between being able to be open about being a sex worker and, like, you know, have that be your public face versus having that be in the shadows, in your shadow side of, like, something that you can't admit to, you know. And there's still so many people out there like that. I definitely serve sex workers and survivors for sure. And I like to use that language, sex workers and survivors, to let survivors know, like, they're included too. If they're survivors of sex trafficking or survivors of sexual abuse, we as sex workers, like, we don't really get enough spaces to where we can actually talk about those issues and heal from them together without having to be on and be sexy.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Or having to be empowered about it. So what really drew you to the work?
I needed to heal, and it was like I had gone on my spiritual awakening as a stripper and as a sensual masseuse, especially. I started really, like, just learning about energy. I studied aesthetics. I became an esthetician while I was dancing in Atlanta. And so I just kind of, like, I think when I was doing sex work full time, I always had, like, a love-hate relationship with it. Like, I loved to be able to just come and go as I please and travel and, you know, make money quickly, and not have to work a typical job. But I had a lot of crazy experiences that were not good. They were not good. And so that messed me up, you know, and I needed to heal from those experiences. And then when I was trying to get healing, like, nobody was offering sex worker friendly therapy or spiritual work or anything like that, you know. And so it's hard. Like, if you want to go and get a reading, say, and you need to know, like, what you're supposed to do, like, if you should take one job or take another job, but you go to a reader that already thinks that stripping is bad and that's not a good thing for anybody to do, you're not going to be able to get an accurate reading from them on, you know, like, their bias is going to cloud it. So just important for us to have access, and it's exciting that we do have that type of access now.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely so important for people to not get advice based on somebody else's stigma, especially whenever they're having questions about their career in sex work. I think it's really hard to find somebody who comes at it from, like, a kind of neutral place of, like, you know, these are the pros and cons, and, like, there are definitely pros to being a sex worker, and there are also a lot of cons.
Right. Yeah.
When did you start Hoser Healers online, or has it always been online?
The whole thing really started online, like, as far as the community. But first I had started my Instagram page, Sacred Stripper, in 2017, and I was just basically telling my stories, like, just my experiences and how I felt about them, and I was being very unfiltered. And it was like a booming time, I guess, for stripper Instagram and sex worker Instagram, because that was when I started finding a lot of people's pages, and a lot of people started finding me, and you just really saw more strippers and sex workers being open about it on Instagram, whereas before, I feel like a lot of us just felt like we had to be more closeted. And I know I did. I'm Muslim and Palestinian, and I felt so relieved and so free when I came out as a sex worker online, but it was also like, I definitely got a lot of backlash, from loved ones, but I got so much support too from other sex workers, and just other people that like admired my openness and, you know, people like, I was surprised to see how many people supported me, because I have been on the internet for a while, and I always like making pages and posting stuff and everything, but I just saw how hungry everybody was for conversations about healing as sex workers. And so people have been coming to me, and like, you know, just wanting a lot of support and stuff. And so I was like, okay, everybody needs to meet each other and like be connected with each other. So I started another page that was like the community page, which was initially called the Sacred Strippers. And I had found Stripper Witchin's page, and she had posted about like wanting to start a group and, you know, healing together as sex workers. So I was like, all right, that sounds awesome. That's what I want to do. So we did a Instagram Live together, and we just talked about healing and spiritual work and things like that. And then we started doing group therapy sessions, and it would just be like dropping, like, you know, peer support. A lot of people would show up, and we would just talk about different stuff. We would do meditations together. And then I started offering the Reiki classes. The Reiki classes were initially in person, but now they're online.
What does a Reiki session look like? And also, could you describe what Reiki is for people who are not familiar?
Oh, sure. Reiki is healing with universal life force energy. It's not exclusive to one culture or continent. It's found all over the world. A lot of different traditions have energy healing in different forms, whether it's like healing with your hands, laying hands, or, you know, prayers that heal, herbal medicine, but it's basically like channeling cosmic energy, which is the energy that comes from the stars and the sky and the sun. It's the energy that we're all made from, cosmic creative energy. And it's really conducive for sex workers using it, because so many of us are already so powerful in our energy, and we already really know how to use energy to influence the vibe. But usually what the hard part is about doing it, because most people have natural skills, but the hard part is releasing the energy. When you're, you know, clearing someone else's energy, or, you know, if you absorb someone else's energy, that's challenging for a lot of people, is to learn how to release it. So, you know, we focus on, like, helping people release those type of blockages, because it's actually, like, I go super deep with it and get very political with it. It's extremely important for all of us to have energetic sovereignty and to know, like, this is my body, this is my energy. I do what I choose with it, and my energy goes towards what I want it to go towards. Because especially for us sex workers, we have so much pure, creative, spiritual, sexual energy, and there's constantly people trying to, you know, use it, steal it, abuse it, whatever. So it's, you know, you already know, it's like, it's annoying to have to deal with that. But it's important to remember that we are powerful, and like, that's why we have to deal with stuff like that, is because people know a good thing when they see it. But I think that's why it's so important for sex workers to be able to heal in a sex work friendly environment. Cause a lot of times people assume that we're going to feel bad about ourselves or have a negative self-image because we're sex workers and we're stigmatized. And a lot of people know that in a lot of cases, they can use that against us in order to manipulate us.
Yeah. How do you kind of bring in the political, like, because I think that there's a little bit of, there's some stigma around, you know, bringing political thoughts or ideology or general politics into spiritual practice, which I think is, you know, just a tactic that people use to evade accountability. But how does the political factor into your healing process?
I agree. Like, I think that with the emphasis of love and light, spirituality is very much a tactic of, it's a colonizer tactic. And we got to understand that just like within the realm of activism, like the realm of spirituality can also be infiltrated. And there's definitely reasons why dominant culture would want to keep us, you know, would want to keep us submissive and keep us from the, like, the dark side, the darkness, you know, the shadow work. Society needs to do shadow work. And, like, shadow work is basically looking at the things that you don't want to look at, you know, like looking at the aspects of yourself that you repress. For a lot of us, if you're femme, if you're socialized femme, a lot of the, like, a lot of the things that exist in our shadows typically have to do with self-empowerment, not being a bitch. Like, if you're assertive or aggressive, you're a bitch, you're masculine. And I feel like I got sidetracked, but I'm just going to say, like, within sex work, like, we use our masculine energy. Like, sex workers really know how to use masculine and feminine energy, and, like, really benefit from it in that way. So, but I'm sorry, I got sidetracked.
No, you didn't. I mean, I think, like, shadow work is a really interesting topic, because I'm, like, not super familiar with, like, what that looks like. Could you give an example of, like, you know, something or somebody that you were working with, and of course no specific details, but, like, how that kind of played out and what the shadow work looked like?
Well, I can give you the example of myself. For one, one of my shadow aspects is I talk too much. I feel like I talk too much. So within your shadow aspects, typically it's something that is actually something that can really bring you wealth and prosperity and fulfillment as a person. But, you know, as a child, nobody wanted to hear my mouth. So I'm learning that it's not okay for me to talk too much. So a lot of, you know, with sex workers, like, the most easiest example is being sexy. Like, that, so many sex workers, like, it is like a double life. It's like, okay, I have my sexy personality, but when I'm outside, don't ask me to be sexy. Like, when I'm, don't expect me to be sexy.
Yeah.
I'm going to just be as, you know, non-sexy as I could possibly be. But it's not fair for us to have to, you know, or then it's like, okay, if I'm at work, you know, I'm going to use my mouthpiece at work, and I feel like I know that I can talk and make money at work, but when I'm outside of work, don't talk to me. Don't ask me to talk. And doing that shadow work gives us, like, more access to ourselves at all times, so that we get to enjoy the fullness of who we are, you know, not just, like, when we think it's okay or when other people think it's okay.
Yeah. No, that resonated so hard. Yeah, I definitely feel like I want to turn into, like, a swamp monster when I'm not doing sex work. Like, don't look at me. Don't touch me.
Yeah.
I don't exist. Don't perceive me.
Yeah, I'm not perceptible. Perceivable.
But how did you sort of come into, like, spiritual work? Like, when you were, did you find it when you were younger, or?
Yeah, have you always been a spiritual person?
I have, my whole life. I was raised with it. I was raised Muslim. I grew up seeing my tata, my grandmother, always pray and read the Quran. And I was into exploring a lot of different religions and different spiritual practices as I got older. So I went through different phases. Like, I went through an atheist phase where I just didn't want to believe in anything. But I really enjoy getting like deeper into the spiritual nature of reality, it just brings so much to me. I think that like I was medicated as a child. I had to take antidepressants and all these different types of medications. I had to go to mental hospitals, and I think I was really scared to like try accessing back my spirituality. Like the only kind of spirituality that was okay in those environments was like Alcoholics Anonymous or like Narcotics Anonymous type of spirituality. And so I feel like for a long time I was just like, I don't want to get institutionalized, so I don't want to let my gift really blossom. And I don't like to take medications. Like with my experience, I felt like even if I have highs and lows, I would rather have that than not really be able to be in touch with my emotions. So like, you know, sometimes people like really, really get it upset to hear that from me about that. But I honestly, I just have my own experiences with it. And I'm very critical of anything that I see in dominant culture that tries to like separate people from their natural selves. That's why I really appreciate the neurodivergent movement, because we all have different ways that our mind works, and it's really special that it works that way. It shouldn't have to work a certain way just for us to survive capitalism and survive living in the society.
Preach.
Like a lot of people that I work with, like there's this thing that I hear all the time that I've always heard and I've said so many times, which is, I'm too crazy to work a normal job. I'm too crazy to do anything but sex work. And I feel like that's so unfair, because it's not our fault that we exist in a society that gives us like not enough good options. And I don't think that that's crazy. Like if you are different, I don't think that's crazy, you know? And so I really appreciate the Reiki path and the spiritual healing path as a alternative career where, you know, you can, it's very easy to go from working sex work to working spiritual work. A lot of things are very similar to it. So I really like advancing that as a path for people, especially because within my experience, you know, there was times where I was healing and doing shadow work, and it would have been way too hard to try to work as a sex worker, you know, escorting or dancing. It's just something I couldn't really do, you know, and it's good for us to have alternative options to make income, so then we don't have to feel like we have to put ourselves in a bad situation or something.
Yeah, totally. Could you talk about some of those parallels between sex work and healing work generally?
It's pretty much like always been, they've kind of like always sort of gone hand in hand. And you're like, it's so much of it. Okay. Sorry. But so much of it is energy work. Like when you're like, say you're at work, you're at a club and you're trying to decide who to go up to. You know, like you vibe off their energy, and you're going to go to the person that something about them makes you feel comfortable approaching them, or like that's somebody that you want to approach. And within spiritual work, like it's very much, a lot of it is very much intuitive. Like you'll just naturally meet the people that, you're designed to work with, or they'll naturally gravitate towards you, you know, you're working with people that are in a vulnerable space, and there's a lot of intimacy involved. So for me, like from working as a sex worker, I'm used to having a high degree of intimacy with my clients, so it's easy for me to have a high degree of intimacy with my spiritual work clients too, which I feel like makes them more comfortable with me, and just easier to receive the healing. When you already know how to put people at ease, that just helps, because everybody doesn't have those skills. Like there's just so many skills that we have as sex workers. Even just like the heightened intuition, like that's a marketable skill. Everybody doesn't have heightened intuition, you know, and it's really important for us to look at our skills, and how beneficial they are and how we can use them in whatever we choose to do.
Oh, that's really hits the nail on the head. I definitely like think a lot about just how we have to move to like be soothing and convincing and caring and attentive and attuned to somebody else's body and all of the things that we have to do to like have this kind of like spiritual alignment with our customers. Because I think that, you know, if you're not, then they won't, you know, they're not going to feel it in the same way, I guess. I mean, you can definitely choose how much of yourself you give or how much you put in, but there's something like, I don't know. I am not a spiritual person. but you know, like, if I use, well, I don't know, like sometimes I like to throw around spiritual words, but there's something a bit cosmic about how you have these connections with people or how you have to like, I mean, at least I'll speak in my experience, like I have to create like a sense of calm or a sense of soothing and like create a reason for them to invite me into their space and into like, you know, onto their lap or whatever, you know. Yeah, it's not just into their bedroom. I mean, it's not just, you know, it's not just sexiness, because sexiness can only get you so far. It's like a lot of the other less ineffable things, you know.
Yeah, you gotta read the room. You gotta
read the room,
feel
the body,
it out, feel the
it
vibe.
Out, feel the vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be
improvisational superstars.
Yeah, yeah. But like kind of mind read too.
Yeah.
Like I think that's a big part of it. It's like,
yeah, knowing what they want without them saying it.
Mm-hmm, because like I feel like a lot of the times like they try not to say the things they want directly. Like they're trying to put on this air of like,
and I think they don't even know a lot of times, like they're not, a lot of times, or at least in my experience, like my clients have not been attuned to like what their deeper needs are or their deeper motivations. Like, you know, the question of like, why are you even here in the first place is like a bigger question than just like, I want to rub my boner against someone.
Right.
Like there are a lot of deeper motivational things.
Yeah. When did you start sex work? And what kind of sex work did you start with?
I started in 2008. I started with webcam. And then I was like, okay, this is cool. But I quickly wanted more money faster. And so I just started doing non-pro. I kind of like, you know, experimented with some people that I knew. And then I started like non-pro escorting, just independently, like not knowing what I was doing at all, just, you know, excited that I was like making money so fast.
How did you find your clients?
On a dating site.
Oh, was it like a civvy dating site or like a sex work, like?
It was, this is so funny. Like it was just a, like, I found people off of Craigslist initially, cause Craigslist used to have the section
personal
where you could do that, but now they don't.
Yeah.
The site that I use was called Adult Friend Finder.
Yes. I'm on that site. That's so weird.
is that one like, is it a dating site? Cause I think I see it on like porn sites, like advertised, like local single moms want to fuck right now.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a hookup site. I guess people might hook up on there like that. I don't know, but I was using it to meet my clients. And I wish back then that I knew everything about energy that I know now, because I quickly got really burnt out doing that. Because I just felt like I was taking on so much energy from my clients and I didn't know how to release it or not take it on.
Oh, good. Okay, so how do you release and not take on other, like, your client's energy? What have you learned?
I have different protocols. Like, every day that I work, whether it's sex work or spiritual work, I always end the day with a salt bath, with a detox salt bath. And I put different ingredients depending on what I need. But certain ingredients are really good. Camphor is one of them, having camphor oil. is really good because you can just immediately after the session, like you can just dot a little bit on you and it sort of clears up the energy. And then you can also put it in your bath to cleanse the energy. That really helps. And then I do Reiki too. So I'm doing Reiki while I'm doing the session. I do Reiki before the session, during the session, and after the session. And that just cleanses me, keeps anything from sticking to me, and it makes the session really nice.
What does doing Reiki look like?
It looks different for everybody. So it's a pretty exciting time right now because I'm about to release the Heaven on Earth Reiki 1 and 2 class, and it's a self-initiation download where you download the manual, you get the audio of the manual as well, and you initiate yourself into it because it looks different for everybody. And the typical format of Reiki is basically you have a Reiki master. That Reiki master is one that teaches you Reiki and initiates you into the system. But we're different. We are Reiki mothers. We're doing spiritual mothering. We're mothering ourselves and we're mothering our friends and our clients and, you know, our family members, the people that come to us. We choose that language because it's more reflective of, like, what we actually do and our philosophy behind it. And typically, you know, you have the person initiate you. We have switched to a self-initiation process. When I started, I did it the regular way as I was trained doing the initiation. What I found is that, like, we need the self-initiation because we need the sovereignty. It's kind of like right now there's like a breakdown going on within the spiritual healing world because there has been such a reliance on spiritual teachers. Well, what I teach is that you really got to rely on yourself because at the end of the day, your spiritual guide, your reader, or your teacher is not going to be there with you when you have to make whatever decisions you're called upon to make. And when you're doing spiritual work, like, you have to really be able to, like, trust yourself and your inner knowing and go with it, even if it doesn't necessarily make logical sense. That's just the way of spirit and the way that it works. And that's one, to get a little political with it, that's one of the ways that the system can really exploit spiritual workers and spiritual work is by just, you know, reinforcing that people need that intermediary between them and the divine, and you really don't. So the emphasis on the self-initiation is because if I were to say, like, this is how you do it, this is how it's supposed to look, that's limiting because it's actually very natural for each person. So one of the things that we teach in our class is stimming, which stimming is from the autistic community and the ADHD community. And it's a method of basically just releasing energy and, like, soothing yourself. So it looks like sometimes it looks like people flapping their arms or, like, shaking their legs or just, like, getting up and, like, busting out into a dance move or into song or something like that. But it really looks different for everybody. And Reiki is kind of the same way because some people might move their hands and, you know, do, like, a certain dance with their hands or something, and that's how they move the energy. Other people can just sit completely still, and that's how they're moving the energy. For me, the way that people can usually tell when I'm doing Reiki is I start to do these really deep cleansing breaths because that's how I'm moving the energy. And I'm moving the energy within my own body, and it's radiating out around me so other people can feel it too.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I think you're right. There is, like, a lot of overlap between the neurodivergent community and, I mean, I guess inherently because there are people who are neurodivergent who are in the spiritual community, but, like, the way you describe Reiki, like, yeah, it definitely, like, makes sense.
Okay, so you kind of said, I think you intonated that you're not really doing as much, like, sex work at this point. What was, like, the tipping point for you?
Well, I feel like I kind of had a vendetta. Like, I didn't want to just leave the industry. Like, I wanted to make the industry comfortable for me and safe for me. And I just sort of realized that I can't do everything, you know? Like, there's only so much time in a day, so I rather, like, do things that I feel like, I don't know, like, the concept of revenge is like, okay, I don't have to get revenge on the industry. I don't know, like, I'm sorry, I don't know where I'm going. It's just like different choices, you know, like, and so it's just a different choice for me, but it was hard to make the choice because I feel like, okay, can I still, you know, can I still be relevant as a healer that's making content and offerings for sex workers if I'm not in it, if I'm not in the industry? But sometimes, honestly, I get way too triggered when people are coming to me and they're, you know, they have different experiences and things that they're healing from. Like, it's not really, it's really too hard, honestly, for me to work in the industry and provide support and healing for industry baddies. And so I'm like, okay, I don't need to keep making myself do things that are too hard. Like, yeah. At this point, I think it's important to just let things be easy. You know, and that's an example I want to set.
No, that's so real. I mean, as much as I love the sex work industries and anything that falls under that umbrella, there is, like, you know, I guess after years in the industry, I'm like, there is a level of trauma that comes with doing this work, even if you're really successful and even if, you know, you have, like, a pretty balanced practice where you have healthy relationships with your clients and people are respectful and caring, like, there still is, like, this emotional drain and toll that it takes on you over time. And it makes a lot of sense that if you're dealing with, like, this heavy stuff, because, I mean, like, you're dealing with sex workers and, like, sex workers are full of, I mean, just, like, honestly, like, any femme group, but especially sex workers, like, there's a lot of trauma, and a lot of, like, hard trauma, like, not just any kind of trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to sort through, like, your own day-to-day, like, all of that drain and then have additional, like, emotional work that you're doing for other people is a lot. It makes sense that you need to have, like, you have to carve that space for yourself. How do you, like, you mentioned that you kind of, like, had trouble reconciling, like, you know, that you want to, that you're taking a step away from the industry, but also helping hoes and, you know, being so integral and part of it, but, like, not doing it. Like, do you ever struggle with, like, imposter, like, syndrome stuff around that, around having to take that space for yourself, and how do you cope with those thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. I've definitely struggled with that because, like, you know, a part of me would be like telling myself, oh, you know, if you can't make it in the industry, then you can't help people that are in the industry. But I think that is, you know, it is really important to remember that those are falsehoods. Like, imposter syndrome is a falsehood. It's just basically fear, you know, and usually when people have imposter syndrome, it means that what they're doing is important and they should keep doing it. And a lot of times when we're afraid of, like, what people might think, it's like, yeah, you know, especially when you're psychic and you already know, mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, they might think that, but who cares? That's their business. It's none of your business. Cause I did feel vindicated when I testified earlier this year. I got back into escorting and I did the things that I needed to do to, like, feel really good about it. I took my time. I got beautiful photos taken. You know, I made a nice ad. I had a really good in call to work out of. You know, I just planned for it. And that was all stuff that, like, I didn't know how to do before in my career, you know, and I didn't really, like, know how to set myself up for success in that way. So it was a good experience because I felt like, you know, I mean, I went to testify and defend my right to be a sex worker, and, like, I'm not hurting anybody. I'm just trying to make a living for myself, and I'm actually contributing really positively to society, and got up in front of everybody and said that, you know, we were fighting to decriminalize sex work in Louisiana. And the bill got, like, thrown out, but it's still there. We're still fighting for it. And then after that, you know, I just went back to work and I was seeing great clients. My clients were fine as hell. Like, I was very happy and it was good. Like, I'm like, okay, I made it, you know. But then I had, like, you know, I had one client try to, like, you know, try to, like, underpay me. And people think that that's a joke or that's funny to do to a sex worker. Yeah. And everybody's sharing that clip this weekend of the woman who was fighting the guy who tried to leave. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it's going viral, and she's saying, my pussy's not for free. And it's like everybody's sharing it to make fun of her, but, like, really, literally, like, people need to really understand that that's rape and robbery at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the things that people think, oh, well, you shouldn't be doing that then. Okay, this is actually my job, so you wouldn't like it if somebody stole from you at work. So why is it okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's sexual.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And it's not like you have the safety net of a corporation behind you. Like, if somebody comes into a McDonald's and, like, steals the cash register, it's like they still got to pay you, you know, minimum wage. Like, you know,
right.
That's your money. Like,
yeah, there's no backup in these instances. And that's really fucked up that people are just, like, thinking it's a joke that this person, like, you know, had to be out there advocating for herself. And that's fucked up. It pisses me off.
Me
but,
too.
I've
even seen other hoes sharing it, making fun of her. And
what
that's exactly why, like, having a community space was so important to me, because I'm like, you know, sometimes we don't even get support from, like, when bad things happen to us, we can't even count on other sex workers to support us all the time, you know? So we are so unprotected in so many ways, and it's literally by the grace of the divine that a lot of times, I just had so many experiences that I just barely made it, and it just seemed so supernatural. Like, how did I not die? How did I survive? Like, how did I come up on the money that I needed? How did this happen? So, okay, because, you know, when you're giving love to so many people and just providing such an important space of vulnerability and care, then the universe looks out for you, you know? And that's not to say that if something bad happens that the universe isn't looking out for you. It's just that sometimes bad shit happens to us, and it's important for us to be able to have somewhere to go where people actually understand and care when it, you know, if it does.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it kind of makes me think of, like, the saying that we have in the Black community, like, not skinfolk is not kinfolk.
Yep. Unfortunately, you can't trust everybody. And I mean, like, sometimes it's super easy to see that you can't trust a person, but then sometimes it's like, you know.
It's just so mean. Like, there's, I mean, the sex work community can just be so, like, I don't know, like, we're forced to be crabs in a barrel, you know?
Yeah.
It's definitely, I hate that analogy, but I'm also like, we're fucking pushed into this fucking barrel, and then people are climbing on top of each other trying to get out, you know? And getting one up on another hoe is, like, not, it's not a win for anybody. It's a loss overall.
Yeah.
We're still fucking in this barrel.
Right. And the barrel is capitalism.
And the barrel is capitalism.
Well, we're coming up on our time, but it has been lovely talking to you.
Yeah.
Where can we find you on the internet?
Yes, and where can people, you know, participate and get your services?
Come to Instagram, Hozar Healers on Instagram. Our website is heavenonearthreiki.org. That's heaven on earth. reiki.org. You can sign up for a class there, find out more about our community. We also have an app the Heaven on Earth app. So you can download the app from our website and connect with other healers there if you're looking for a sex worker friendly spiritual workers, healers, friends, people. Come join up with us. And we also had the opportunity to have two local really fun parties that were central healing spaces for sex workers. We had two parties this past year in school. And at the last party, we took photos for a calendar. So we're going to be having calendar sales open soon for our Heaven on Earth 2022 calendar photos. Healers representing different gods and goddesses and their shadow sides. So it's just a really beautiful expression of who we are and where we're at. There's a lot of different ways for you to plug in. And yes, come check us out. All are welcome.
Definitely. Thank you. You can find me nowhere. Nowheresville 6969. I'm not on the internet, but send me good vibes, send me well wishes, just via the universe. That'd be cool. Where can we find you, Selena?
You can find me hiding under a rock.
Are you Patrick Starr?
Yeah, I live under a rock under the sea, actually, so this is accurate. You can find me evading the police. You can find me on the streets. You can catch these hands.
Find me as a jewel thief.
You can find me as a jewel thief, but you can also find me on Patreon as a real pretty boy girl, and you can follow me on Instagram at pretty boy girl. I haven't been super active because social media is a fucking drain on my psyche, and life is hard. Uh-huh. And social media doesn't really equate to much, but it does equate to some stuff, so that's why I'm on there sometimes. And that's it. All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning into this episode. I wish you a winter solstice. Happy winter solstice. I wish you convictions for people who have murdered black people. Mm-hmm. Although I'm also an abolitionist, so this is hard to reconcile.
Right.
I wish
trial by fire,
trial by combat. I wish that they could walk down like a row of shame, people yelling shame at them, mm-hmm. like Game of Thrones. I always want to say Lord of the Rings, but it's Game of Thrones.
Walk the plank. That'd be a good one.
That'd be great. I'd love for them to have to work as servants for black families. Although I would also be worried about them poisoning black families.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, and have them do the household chores. Anyway, that's what I wish. So have a great week, everybody.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye.